Welcome to lesson 14, preliminary pricing. Now we come to it. In our past lessons, I've been intentionally vague about setting your pricing because pricing is actually a fairly nebulous objective thing. Aside from hard costs, you can pretty much name your own price. Remember the Tiffany pen that was priced 20 times higher than a sterling silver ballpoint pen I found on Amazon? Or how about the way Starbucks was charging at least 2 to 3 times the market rate for coffee in the US when they first launched their stores? When you set the right frame, you can pretty much name your price. Nobody would have thought about paying $12 for a roll of toilet paper before the coronavirus pandemic of 2020, when people were hoarding this stuff, making it scarce in stores and online. So pricing is flexible and will typically respond to what's going on in the marketplace. It will also align with your brand positioning. You can't flex so far as to move out of your positioning or people won't trust it. And by extension, they won't trust you. So what is this right frame that I'm talking about? In real estate, there's a term called comping, where a realtor looks for homes on the market that are comparable, thus the term comps, to the one that they're trying to sell. But their home won't be exactly the same. So they adjust pricing upwards or downwards based on the comps that they find. If they want to get a higher price for the home, they look for several homes in the higher priced market that have a few more amenities than their home, and then a few homes in the lower price market that don't have all the amenities that their house has. That way, they can show prospective buyers that their home is rightly priced above the lesser homes and closer to the higher homes. But often in doing that comping, they'll ignore homes that are priced about the same with similar amenities or lower priced homes that have better amenities. Why? Because they're telling the story. They control the narrative. They want to sell that home, not someone else's. So they're going to create a frame that puts their home in the best light possible. So setting the frame is about the stories or the mythology you or someone else has built around your offer. And that mythology can come from different sources, some of them that you can control, while others you can't. You can't always control what other people will say about your offers, but you can control what you tell people. Now, if you hear the word mythology and start thinking about ancient civilizations like Egypt, Rome, and Greece, you're not alone. So let's bring this concept out of the ancient world right up to your own company. Every company has an origin story. Every product has an origin story. Some of this comes from your why, your values, your beliefs. So we won't dig too deeply into that right now because that's really marketing and mindset stuff. But you need to know enough now to understand how your stories reflect your pricing and vice versa. Let's look at beef, for example. You can probably buy a pound of ground Angus beef in your local area for about $3 to $5, depending on the fat content. Grass-fed beef will be about 20% more. Organic grass-fed beef will be about twice the price of the generic ground beef, and that may or may not be of Angus quality. But traditional Wagyu beef from Japan? This is some of the most expensive beef in the world, running about $200 per pound. Why so much more? Aside from the cows themselves, it's the mythology or the stories about how Wagyu are raised that cause this beef to command such a high price. According to an article on Business Insider, there are 4 breeds of cattle that are suitable for true Wagyu, and there are a lot of imitations out there. Quote, these cows were bred for physical endurance, giving them more intramuscular fat cells. The fat is distributed more evenly throughout their muscle, which is why Wagyu beef looks pink and tastes so tender. And the Japanese government tightly regulates Wagyu production to protect the value and quality of the meat. Wagyu is graded on 2 main factors: how much meat can be yielded and the quality of the marbled fat. Only A3 to A5 Wagyu is certified for sale in Japan, and the higher the grade, the higher the price. Wagyu beef has gained almost legendary status, and there are many myths about Wagyu farms and the way the animals are treated, from getting daily massages to being fed beer, but these often aren't true. The cows are raised very differently in each region and by different farmers, but they're often raised by a breeder until they're about 10 months old, and then they're sold at auction to a fattening farmer. By the time the calves are sold at auction, they can already fetch 40 times the price of U.S. cattle. The fattening farm will keep the animals in small pens and feed them a mixture of fiber and high energy concentrate made from rice, wheat, and hay. And they're often fed this 3 times a day for almost 2 years until the animals are almost 50% fat. Only the pregnant cows and breeding cattle are allowed to graze on pasture. The length of the fattening process and the import prices of the huge amount of concentrated feed increases the cost of the beef. And over this fattening period, each cow will eat 5 tons of feed. And if and when a cow goes to auction, it can sell for as much as $30,000. Comparatively, Black Angus cattle, which are considered the cream of the crop in countries like the United States and Australia, typically don't sell for more than $3,000. And depending on the kind, the Wagyu can fetch close to $200 per pound. High marbling is the common goal, but the approach varies by farm and area. While there are more than 300 varieties of Wagyu available, the most notable cuts come from 10 regions. One of the most expensive cuts is Matsusaka from the Mie Prefecture, made exclusively from virgin female cows and highly prized for its tenderness. In 2002, one Matsusaka cow sold for 50 million yen, or roughly $400,000. However, the best known cuts of Wagyu are Kobe beef, which comes from the city of Kobe in Hyogo Prefecture and is made exclusively from steers or castrated bulls, end quote. Now, even Kobe Wagyu sells for close to $100 per pound, about 20 times normal supermarket rates. Now, anybody can feed their cow until it's 50% fat. And as I said, there are a lot of imitators out there because the market demand is growing and the supply is tightly controlled. But honestly, virgin cows that have been massaged with sake and spend their days listening to classical music? That's all about the mythology or the stories that you hear about this type of beef. It may or may not be true, but it sure paints a picture of a very fancy kind of beef. You have the power to create your own brand stories, and they need to be in line with your branding. Pricing tells a story. Every commercial or advertisement, which is a tiny dose of mythology when you think about it, reinforces that story if you're doing your branding correctly. If I show up at your door with a cup of Starbucks or a cup of coffee from McDonald's, you have an expectation of the quality of the product and the pricing of each. If I swap the contents of the cup, though, you might be surprised to know that McDonald's beats Starbucks head-to-head in taste contests, but you'd still expect to pay more for Starbucks coffee than McDonald's. Why? Pricing mythology. So look at your brand stories and see if your pricing matches your mythology. Remember the positioning spectrum that we talked about in our last cycle of excellence. Remember to price for profitability too. Your offers need to generate enough revenue to cover the costs of making them, pay you a salary, and still have enough profit to extend the life of your company. When you set your pricing, you might find one of two things. People will gladly pay what you ask, or you're getting crickets. Now, if you're getting crickets, the first place to look is your pricing, but it's not the only place to look. First, make sure your pricing matches the story you're telling about the offer. Then look at your market. What are you comping to? Are you comparing yourself with other high-end brands or low-end brands or something else? Does your pricing match that part of the spectrum? You may actually need to raise your rates to match your market expectations. I've told the story before about how John Frieda, salon stylist to the stars, originally priced his hair care line with standard retail markups. He took the wholesale price and he doubled it. And the products sat on the shelves. Then he raised the prices again and they started flying off the shelves. Why? Because his audience expected to pay more for products in his salons. His shampoo prices didn't match the fees for his styling services. Once he made the shift, the rest, as they say, is history. You may also have to price beyond the current market if you're creating something new like Starbucks did. No one was paying that much for coffee until Starbucks created a new coffee drinking experience. So people weren't just paying for the coffee, they were paying for the experience as well. But what if you've done all that and your market still won't bear your rates? You have a couple options. Number one, change the offer. Or number two, change the audience. Take cake mixes, for example. When the first cake mixes rolled off the assembly line back in the 30s, they included everything. Just add water and go with a smile. But by the time the first patent was approved, the Duff Company had discovered that women preferred fresh eggs to dehydrated ones, so they had to revise their patent from just add water to just add water and egg. This is something called the one-step-back approach, taking away an element or moving one step back in the process to create a different offer. You could repackage your offers in a variety of ways, but the one-step-back approach is a great way to test changes to your offers without having to reinvent the wheel. Another thing you can do is change your audience. When I made the pivot from direct sellers to creative entrepreneurs, my content didn't change that much. The things I teach are still pretty much the same, though I use fewer examples and terms that are direct sales specific. I got a warmer reception from the growing audience of creatives for my training, and they were more willing to pay my rates, so I put my focus there. So your assignment is to look at the frame of your company and see if your pricing matches that frame. We'll dig deeper into sharing those stories in our upcoming marketing lesson, but you need to lay the groundwork now because your pricing tells a story. Everything needs to match and make sense, or you're going to struggle to attract buyers to your offers on a consistent basis. In our next lesson, I'll show you an easy way to reduce or eliminate shiny object syndrome and stay better focused on what your business really needs now in order to be successful. We're going to go through the entire Fix This Next approach so that you can pinpoint the next step for your business. I'll see you there.